bring the meeting to order, please? Can I have a roll call?
Yes, a second. Kurt Alsted?
He's walking in further back down.
Tracy Carmencio?
Here.
Tim Doherty? Michael Dressler? Michael Francis?
Here.
Robert Haltaway?
Here.
Bruce James?
Here.
Carl Richka?
Here.
Jim Riley?
Here.
Michael Sevatich? Michael Tiefang?
Here.
James Vizioli?
Here.
Richard Bowden?
Here.
Robert Wolf?
Here. Can you open public meetings, please? Do you have something with that?
Someone said that Judge Dressler may be coming.
He's here now, he's coming in.
And I had received that he was.
Yeah, we said have to do a little.
Here?
Yeah, if you guys could slide down a little bit on that end.
I won't slide.
Tim's not here.
He's out of here, so.
He'll be.
He's here.
He's not.
Here we go.
This meeting is being held in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. The Highlands Council sent written notice of the time, date, and location of this meeting to newspapers throughout the state and posted notice on the Highlands Council website.
Can we please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next item up, we would like to take them separately, approval of the Highlands Council minutes of June 19th.
Motion to approve.
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Alsted?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
Yes.
Councilmember Doherty?
Yes.
Oh. Councilmember Dressler? Councilmember Francis?
Yes.
Councilmember Haltaway?
Aye.
Councilmember James?
Yes.
Councilmember Richka?
Yes.
Councilmember Sevatich? Councilmember Tiefang?
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden?
Yes.
Councilmember Walton?
Yes.
Chairman Riley?
Yes. Can we get approval of my yes is for the portion that I was intended to end up with not there.
Yes.
Can I get a motion on the executive session minutes, please?
Motion to approve.
Second. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Alsted?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
Yes.
Councilmember Doherty?
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler?
Yes.
Councilmember Francis?
Abstain.
Abstain?
Abstain.
Councilmember Baltimore?
Aye.
Councilmember James?
Yes.
Councilmember Richka?
Yes.
Councilmember Sevatich? Councilmember Tiefang?
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden?
Yes.
Councilmember Wolf?
Yes.
Chairman Ryan?
Abstain. Next item on the agenda is approval of Highlands Development Credit Bank minutes and their concession minutes.
Motion to approve.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Alsted?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
Yes.
Councilmember Doherty?
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler?
Yes.
Councilmember Francis? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear you. Councilmember Haltaway?
Aye.
Councilmember James?
Yes.
Councilmember Richka?
Yes.
Councilmember Sevatich? Councilmember Tiefang?
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden?
Yes.
Councilmember Walton?
Yes.
Chairman Riley?
Yes. To just be clear, that was for both the regular and the executive. Next item up is the chairman's report. I only have one thing this evening. The personnel committee has been talking for the last few weeks, and with the input of our last two postings for executive director, I thought it was going up today, but I think it's going up first thing tomorrow morning. The posting for the executive director's position, it will be posted for just shy of 3 weeks. Normally it's 2, but we figured summertime would give it a little extra time.
So I believe the expiration date for receiving the resumes is August 6th. So, and then when they come in, those resumes will go to the personnel committee and we'll give them. Any council members have any items? Seeing none. We'll go to the acting executive director's report.
Thank you. I have a number of items that I'd like to highlight in my report. The first is on plan conformance implementation. As you can see in Bloomsbury, they have adopted the master plan of their Highlands element, but I really would like to talk a little bit about the township of Parsippany and their withdrawal from planning area conformance. They had come in and talked to us before they did this. They were kind of on the fence because they have a number of issues in Parsippany they were worried about. Our understanding, based on the wording in their resolution, is that the decision was motivated by a variety of needs related to anticipated development projects and the need to repair and adopt a new wastewater management plan in order to address the failing Skyview Heights pump station, which is really an emergency situation for them. However, I have their resolution, and if you'd like a copy of it, I'd be happy to get it to you. They have really left the door open to coming back into plan conformance at a later date, because they say, whereas the township can, at a later date, decide to restart the voluntary Highland Plans conformance process, and whereas the township will continue to study incorporating the applicable goals and objectives of the Highland Regional Master Plan into the township master plan, where they are determined to be on balance with the need to further targeted economic improvement and redevelopment opportunities of the township. So we will continue to be in touch with them and work with them and hope to bring them back into the fold as soon as they have solved some of the issues that are confronting them. So that's number one. On the HDC bank credit allocation and purchase update, there were four allocation determination, all for three for West Milford and one for Bloomingdale. And I do have, under the state agency coordination activities, some really good news, and that is that we closed on the Gibbs property, but we were instrumental in putting this deal together, and that was really Tennessee Gas's mitigation requirement. It is a 190-acre parcel in West Milford. The DEP also used it to mitigate Tennessee Gas's needed contribution. It was a really complicated process. The Land Conservancy is the now the proud owner of the property. They will steward it. It's adjacent to land that they already own. However, part of the process was figuring out what to do with the dam and a mine shaft road that were on the property, and Tennessee Gas paid for the mitigation of that as well. So it mitigates the requirement of Tennessee Gas to provide 147 acres of prime forest / critical wildlife habitat for our mitigation. The property lies within the affected HUC 14. The property is less than 10 miles from Tennessee Gas's project. It's nearly surrounded by preserved watershed lands, and it's greater than 190 acres in size. And I would like to thank, particularly from our staff, because they really worked hard to make this happen, Curry Benscoter, who is out of town on a much-needed vacation, but Kim Kaiser also played a very important role in making this happen. We're, as I said, excited for it for a number of reasons. We hope it will serve as a prototype for further acquisitions of this sort, and that appears to be just a total win-win situation for every agency that was involved. I've also been tasked on reporting out on Fenimore. I've had a couple of conversations for the DEP. What I asked for were status and progress reports on capping. I was also very interested in receiving information on whatever complaints had been filed by the public and their resolution. And this is the update report they have sent to me. It is being shared with Roxbury so that we're all on the same page. But the gas collection and treatment system continues to operate 24/7. The DEP is treating about 1 ton of hydrogen sulfide a day. Odor complaints are virtually non-existent. The few that have been received were investigated and found to be unrelated to the landfill. One was actually a complaint about a smell of raw sewage, which turned out to be just that, a smell of raw sewage related to the landfill. DEP met last week with Roxbury Township Fire and Police to review activities on site and update emergency response to the site should a problem arise. A site visit by officials was included in this meeting. A notice of intent to award a construction contract for capping the site was issued by the Department of Treasury on July 3rd. The state is currently in a state law mandated 10 business day protest period. At the conclusion of this time period, if there are no protests, a contract will be awarded and work will begin approximately 30 business days later. And that concludes my report on Fenimore. And I have one last thing to report on as sort of a personal nature. As you know, I was really sick for the last meeting. I could not attend, but I did participate by phone. And it was really interesting being on the phone end because I had an opportunity to assess how our system works. And it was clear that some of you, in the interest of being friendly and collegiate, would turn your head to talk to your colleagues as you were making comments. And here's what it sounds like, okay? It's like, friends, Romans, lend me your... Okay, so when you turn away from the microphone, it doesn't make your voice softer, it distorts it. So I would ask, particularly when somebody is trying to phone in, that you remember to ignore your colleagues and just speak straight to the microphone. And that concludes my report.
Yeah. Thank you, Margaret. That brings us next to our committee reports. First one up is the Plan Conformance Committee. Who's reporting now?
Well, I think the members of the staff are going to make a presentation
yes.
on this.
Okay, and Chris, if you'd like to come up and join me. Okay, we do have a presentation. But first, I'd like to ask Andy to kind of explain why we're back looking at this item again.
Last month, the approval of the minutes of the Plan Conformance Committee did not pass. The vote, I believe, was 7-2. 8 affirmative votes as a quorum. So this, now there are more members here tonight, and so that's why this item is on the list. Again, and there's going to be a little further explanation at this point in time, as I understand it. That's why it's back tonight.
Okay. All right, so we are going to review again the checklist approach with a particular reference for Sparta and Alexandria. I'm just going to kind of review some of the things that we have brought forward in the past. As you know, Council has already adopted this process and assigned review of staff for chat towns that are coming in through the checklist approach. As you know, the checklist approach and the land use ordinance approach are identical except for the reviewer. And the land use, you can switch. And that's okay. And that the checklist approach has been identified as appropriate for towns where there is very limited development potential. So I'd like to talk a little bit about what we mean by very limited development potential. The criteria that are used to make this determination are analysis of build-out report data, underlying zoning, confirmation with municipal professionals, evaluation of aerial imagery, and land already preserved. And you've seen this chart before, but I'd like to talk about it a little bit in depth. In the land use ordinance itself, we have an applicability requirement that basically sets the threshold for review under the checklist and or the land use ordinance. Specifically, as it says in the land use ordinance, this ordinance shall apply to any application seeking approval of a site plan, subdivision, or change in use where approval of such application would A, result in the ultimate disturbance of one or more of land, B, produce a cumulative impervious surface area of 1/4 acre or more, C, introduce or expand a use not permitted by this ordinance, or D, in the case of residential development, create 3 or more dwelling units. And again, a summary of the benefits are it provides equal protection, saves municipality with limited development, and some of you have been quite eloquent on this subject. the cost of adopting an ordinance that is very long, very complicated, requires training of personnel on the town's part, and really would not be used frequently, if indeed at all. Okay, so we're going to look at Sparta Township first. I would like, as we go through this list of potential properties, you to keep in mind that the preservation area is heavily constrained already by the septic density rules. Best case scenario is you need 25 acres for a lot. Worst case, in the forested lands, you need 88. So, if our threshold for review for residential development is 3, you need 75 acres to hit the threshold and come under the review of the land use ordinance. So, Wilma Fry, at our last meeting, expressed a number of concerns about lots because they are not preserved. Some of the lots that she mentioned were under 75 acres. It was Lot 7, Lot 5, 72.9 acres, Block 7, Lot 70.01, 52.98 acres, Block 7, Lot 69, 48.15 acres, and Block 3, Lot 69, 23.96 acres. And as again, as I said, because they don't hit the 75-acre threshold, they would not come under the review of the land use ordinance slash checklist ordinance under any circumstances. They're just too small. Okay, we all see where we're coming from on that one? Now, once you get into land that's more than cleared, where you have forested land, then you start to need more land as required for a lot. For example, if it's a fully forested piece of property, you would need 88 acres according to the septic density rules for a lot. So, if you look at our analysis here, we have a number of lots that were referenced in Ms. Fry's report. Even though there would be a lot of acreage, if, for example, in Block 19, Lot 110, I think I got that right. Yes, 116 acres, it's completely forested. So again, we wouldn't be reaching the threshold of 3 building lots that would cause the ordinance to kick in. There was one and only one lot that we identified as potentially being subject to the land use slash checklist ordinance, and that was the one that's highlighted in yellow here, Block 19, Lot 38, 13 acres, mostly forested with some agricultural use. There's the potential for 3 development units, and it may be subject to the Highlands land use ordinance. So this is the process that we go through. We don't evaluate any parcel under 75 acres because it's just not going to fit in. And we do go in and find out, you know, how much the property is affected by forestation, which would lead to even more acreage needed for a lot. Okay? Any questions thus far? Okay. And this is a picture of the area in question in Sparta Township. You can see the forested acres, which is and the non-forested acres. But again, there's really not much room for development. And again, it's because the preservation area already is heavily constrained. And this is the chart that you're familiar with regard to Sparta. Again, there's only one lot that would be subject to the land use ordinance. And again, because the number is so small, the staff, as well as the checklist committee, which is now the Planning Conformance Committee, felt that it was appropriate for the checklist ordinance approach because there's only one opportunity the town has to use it. Moving on to Alexandria and the build-out report, same process was used here as was used in Sparta and indeed all the towns that we analyzed. Again, there is one lot that might be subject to the Highlands Land Use Ordinance, Block 4, Lot 20, 143 acres, mostly agricultural use, and there is a potential for 3 development units, and therefore it would meet our threshold. here's what it looks like. Then again, the chart that you're familiar with, and again, there's only one developable lot potential. So, even though Sparta and Alexandria are mostly retrofits, they've been through the petition process and we've gone back and identified them as being appropriate for the checklist approach. They are subject to the same analysis that we do for the towns that would be coming through for a petition. It's exactly the same evaluation, and both instances include being vetted by the Plan Conformance Committee. I will say that if conditions change, if there's changes to the Act or changes to the subject density rules that might affect the number of parcels that would be subject to a checklist ordinance approach, it's subject to reevaluation by this council at any time. And the towns are clear on that. If the conditions change, they may not be allowed to use the checklist approach. They may be asked to move to the full land use ordinance if there's more than a nominal number of parcels that might come in for an application. And this is kind of like an editorial comment. This is really a service that we offer to our towns. We don't expect it will be used much at all, but I think it gives towns a level of comfort in working with us because they're not being asked to do anything that they think is onerous and unreasonable.
Feel that it's really important that everybody realize that the reason this happened is because we didn't have this level of information ready to, at the hands of the council.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that I think is really a problem with having a plan conformance committee is we get these very brief minutes and then you vote on the minutes without any real analysis of what's happening in these municipalities and why a committee is considering the checklist approach. So I think the lesson to be learned from this is that the council and the public as well, because this was brought really from the public, really needs to have more information in order to be able to have an informed vote at the council level and informed comments from the public. And I think it's great that the public, took this on and looked at it, and Wilma Fry's letter, really pointed out very important discrepancies. And I think we all should learn a lesson from this and not have it repeated. I'm not in support of this approach. I'm very concerned that if applicable septic density standards do change, how we're going to possibly go back and start. And I know you're saying the towns are aware of this, but they've been sort of sold this bill of goods now, and how are we ever going to go back and try to then get land use ordinances or changes in the checklist approach implemented at the town level? It's just going to be a big mess. And also, mentioned that you don't expect it to be used much. Well, it's been used a lot. As a matter of fact, I think there's only one that I can remember offhand that has not used the checklist ordinance in many, many, many months since we really started this checklist approach. Everything's been run through the checklist committee in bulk without any real, examination of detail by the council. And I think, we should reconsider using this approach because of the lack of detailed examination in the public at these meetings.
Let me clarify what I meant when I said the check use ordinance would not be used a lot. That would be per town.
Oh, I understand. So that's my concern. The other concern I have is that I really think the municipality should be in charge of this, not the council. And so, whereas it's kind of glossed over that the only difference is that the council is doing the reviews instead of municipalities, it's taking away the power from the municipalities to really be in charge of this and understand it and implement it.
The municipality could opt to do it regardless. They're not forced to.
But when the land use ordinance is adopted, then the municipality is the one that moves forward.
They can move forward with that any time they want. So we're not usurping their power. There are times to move forward with that.
Not if they have been offered an easy way out to use the checklist, which is, the quick way of having the staff look at it instead of them. It's, it's definitely a more comprehensive approach when the land use ordinance is applied. And I continue to have concerns about those municipalities that have already opted into using the land use ordinance, and now they see these other towns going the quick way, the easy way, and letting, you know, the staff do the heavy lifting. I don't think that's right, and I think that that's going to continue to come back to bite us, too.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Yes.
From the other side, I'm a strong believer in the chainless ordinance. When you take a look at municipalities, and having been a mayor for 8 years, I understand how things get put off to the side. You don't have activity. Who's in charge of this? It changes constantly. I think that having the council do these reviews and do the calculations, you will have a level of consistency that will exceed anything that the municipalities will be able to do. Especially in these smaller towns, almost any town, development has slowed down to the point where the number of applications, even within a municipality, even a large municipality, in the preservation area, are probably only going to be one or two a year. And now, if the town wants to adopt the ordinance, we should provide, as a fee for service, the opportunity to review it for them, so they don't have to keep people trained, and they don't have to stay on top of it, and they have to review that. That should be a clear option, in my opinion, for the municipality. And for a municipality, for anybody that's managed a master plan and or a zoning ordinance, and I was 8 years as a planning board chairman, 8 years as mayor, trying to just keep that ordinance up to date and everything changes. When there's a single change in the statute, every one of these towns is going to have to go through and revise their public hearings, print. I mean, it's a massive, massive undertaking. And I think that having each town have to adopt that ordinance actually is inhibiting the acceptance of the master plan. I mean, that's what happened in Bedminster. Why are we going to adopt this for, you know, we got a little strip across the top, we got like 100 acres, 200 acres, 300 acres in the preservation area. Why in the name of God will we spend $5,000 to try to go through that whole master plan and adaptation process, and then try to keep somebody trained for 30 lots? You know, there's a point here where, yes, in the perfect world, but we know that in New Jersey we're far from a perfect world, and managing this whole thing is so difficult anyway. Anything you can do to take the burden off your municipality is going to improve the quality of the response. If we always did all of them, the quality of the response would be consistent and most likely correct. We would see all of these calculations would be available to everybody, to all the public, and I think that it would be a much better approach to the whole thing. Thank you for your time. Mr. Richcombe?
Yes, as a member of the Plan Conformance Committee, I'd like to make a suggestion to kind of change the procedure. We met early in June for SPART in Alexandria, and about a week or two later, we brought it before the full council. I would suggest that in the future, we meet the Plan Conformance Committee, and if there's a town or towns that are going to be using the checklist approach, then we announce it at the next meeting so that the members of the public, the members of the council, can then have another month. We'll put it off another month to vote on it. As an example, if we meet in August, Plan Conformance Committee, we will announce it in September, but will not vote on the minutes until October. This way it gives the council members and members of the public a whole month to ask as many questions or meet with the staff and get all the answers that they need before the council votes on it. I think that's a better approach as far as transparency, and you know, we want everybody to have as much chance to ask the questions and get the information that they need.
Anybody else?
Yes, sir. Yeah. I, you know, this whole thing, if we're going to give the responsibility to the town to do the land use ordinance, we should let the town decide whether or not they're going to do the ordinance or use the checklist. The towns are ultimately responsible. The rules haven't changed as far as I know. We still apply the rules of the legislature, and we still apply the rules of the master plan. So to me, it doesn't make any difference how you get to that end of the road, and if it's better for the municipality to use the checklist, then use the checklist. We're still here. I don't know that it's going to do any harm whatsoever. I absolutely disagree, Tracy. I think that in order to encourage participation, what we're trying to do. The checklist is a perfect media for that. And I have nothing but the greater confidence on our committee, by the way. I think they're technically capable. They have our staff. And their report is credible.
Any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, one last comment. I also object to this being a behind-closed-doors committee. And I really want to reassert the importance of opening up the committee to the public. In the past, we have had committee meetings open to the public, years back before you were chairman, Mr. Riley. And at that time, the public did not participate in the meetings, but they were there. And they were able to learn, like Mr. Richko is just saying, they'd have the opportunity then to listen and learn. So I think Mr. Richko's suggestion of putting forward the minutes at a meeting and not voting until the next meeting is a good one. But I think that coupled with that, these committee meetings, and including also the RMP committee, should be open to the public and not kept secret like they are now.
Great. They're not secret. They're released to the public after the meeting. But quite frankly, in reference to the checklist, the criteria is actually very spelled out. With or without the committee. The committee was wanting to give an extra step of participation. Quite frankly, I think the majority of people were prepared to move forward with the checklist as was. I think the committee was another layer to get more information to this body and the public in advance. It was a compromise. I'm concerned it was in charge. Put some of that forward, and if I get correct in that, somebody else did, I apologize, but it was... So I think we've taken the extra step when it comes to the checklist. Because quite frankly, I think the criteria is spelled out enough, and our meetings are not long, and Carl can probably attest, because it is spelled out quite, you know, the entire picture is spelled out for us, and it's just as this was tonight for you. So I think the criteria is small. But I agree with this. Again, this is to accommodate the public. We could try to get the minutes out either earlier or hold it a meeting, but you know, unless there's some other issues, I don't think it's a do or die situation here. Most of these are coming back.
So, well, as I said, in the future, I will bring it up to the Plan Conformance Committee that you know, we do announce what towns we were discussing and not vote on it that month, or wait another month. And I said before, this way it's transparent. Anybody on the council can contact the staff, members of the public can contact the staff, and all your questions can be answered.
Makes sense to me.
Any other comments? Seeing none, can we move forward and get
the... Well, we actually have to go back to the resolution.
I know, I was just going to ask for a motion on the resolution.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a motion. This is the approval of the minutes for the Plan Performance Committee. This is a public matter, so does anybody in the public wish to be heard on the Plan Conformance Minutes? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is George Cassa. I'm representing the Alliance for Historic Hamlets. First, I appreciate the efforts of the staff to produce the backup for Sparta and Alexandria, and it's approaching a level of clarity now that I think even I'm starting to understand. Fundamentally, the approach makes sense to me. What is still confusing is the process under which, or the meaning of the word adoption, especially as it relates to what I see in the most recently posted implementation tracking sheet, which has always had a checklist ordinance submittal date and deemed consistent date. Now, right next to it, and I'm not sure when it was inserted, is a checklist only approach ordinance submitted date and adopted date. So the question is, is there a new model ordinance for the checklist only, the checklist ordinance approach ordinance that distinguishes whatever has to be in that document from the model document that already exists for the simple checklist ordinance. It does seem to me that the at least the title of the column implies that there is a public process that is analogous to the other ordinances which must be adopted after they have been discussed in public. And I have one recommendation to make is that this very information could be screened and approved and recommended and posted on the website by the subcommittee that says, this is what we intend to present at the next council meeting for the public's information. If you adopt the minutes, then I understand what's happened. Right now, I'm still not clear as to at what point in time the checklist ordinance approach becomes effective.
Well, it's effective immediately, because whenever you get your plan performance, the checklist kicks in. It's whether it's going to remain that way down the road. So anybody that comes in for plan performance, it always starts off with the checklist. Now what's happening here is with these other certain towns where they're staying with the checklist. And
I'm from Tewksbury Township.
You're from Tewksbury, okay. I'm sorry, I thought you were one of these.
Well, I'm representing the Alliance for Historic Hamlets, which is based in
Tewksbury. And if there's any standard ordinance, I'm sure staff can supply you.
Is there any substantive difference between a model ordinance for the checklist and a model ordinance for the checklist approach?
Yeah.
Please.
The checklist ordinance itself is an interim ordinance. It's meant to be held in place until the full land use ordinance is adopted. It has the same applicability between the checklist ordinance and the checklist approach ordinance. However, because a town will be remaining as a checklist approach and not moving to land use ordinance, it's bolstered. It means that anybody who is using the checklist approach is notified that this is pending. There are conditions of the Regional Master Plan, the Highlands Act, the Septic Density Rules. This has been offered to them specifically by staff and approved by this council, so it has been language inserted in it. It also allows for this council must be copied on the full process as an application moves through, any application moves through the town. And so it bolsters the copying of the application throughout the process.
And does that mean that, therefore, there would be public participation as there is in the case of the checklist, the simple checklist ordinance?
Well, your time's up, but any ordinance has to have a public comment area within
the same.
So, thank you. Anybody else in public wish to be heard? Seeing none, we'll move on. Any further council conversation? Seeing none, roll call, please. No.
Councilmember Alstead?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
No.
Councilmember Daugherty?
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler?
Yes.
Councilmember Francis?
Yes.
Councilmember Holtaway?
Aye.
Councilmember James?
Yes.
Councilmember Richko?
Yes.
Councilmember Tiefang?
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden?
Yes.
Councilmember Walton?
Yes.
Chairman Riley?
Yes. That brings us to our next report, Budget and Finance Committee. This is a consideration of resolution, approval to extend the fiscal year budgets 2014 at the same average monthly spending level. This is a voting matter with public comment, I believe. You're reporting that, Paul?
Yeah, thank you. The FY15 budget was signed before the end of the fiscal 14 year. The budget for the Highlands Council is the same as it was last year. We're asking this extension of a 2014 budget until October, so we'll be spending the same category until the final budget can be worked on. Obviously, it has to be the exact same total dollars because that's what's in our appropriation, but there may be movement within the budget, and that's being worked on by staff. So this will allow us to operate until October, just like every municipality. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any comments? Can I get a motion? I have a motion.
A second.
And a second. Would anybody in the public wish to be heard on the essentially temporary budget? Yes, sir.
Hank Klump.
Hank. Get shot, Tim.
Hank Klump, 24 Longview Road. Question for you, how much is the budget?
Are we spending?
$2 million?
I mean, we're spending all kind of money.
It's a,
some of it's coming out of my pocket.
It's an appropriation equal to what we spent for the first 3 months last year.
How much is it?
I don't have that number.
The total budget's $2 million.
The annual budget.
You can send it to me.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on this subject? Seeing none, close the public portion. Any further council discussion? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Alston.
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio.
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler.
Yes.
Councilmember Francis.
Yes.
Councilmember Holtzler.
Aye.
Councilmember James.
Yes.
Councilmember Richter.
Yes.
Councilmember Tiefman.
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli.
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden.
Yes.
Councilmember Wong.
No.
Chairman Ryan.
Yes.
Excuse me. Who's second the motion?
I thought it was Bob.
Was it Bob?
Second.
Next committee report is the Regional Master Plan Update Committee. This is the status report. Mr. Alston?
Yes. Reporting on the meeting that we held on Wednesday, June 11th, continuing to work primarily on the behind-the-scenes elements that are going to enable us to successfully carry out the Regional Master Plan review and update. You may recall there's basically a tripod approach, three elements. The web portal, which is going to be collecting all of the public input and data for us to consider. The monitoring program, which is going to provide the measurements of certain elements that we're going to be identifying, as well as the fiscal impact study. What we wanted to do today is to share with you a PowerPoint that we prepared and reviewed at this meeting. That Corey's going to provide to help you better understand the plan for the monitoring program. So, Corey, why don't you take it over?
Thank you, Kurt. What I'd like to do today is go over with you the scope of services for the monitoring program recommendation report. That is one of the three components of this process. This slide will look familiar because it is from the presentation that I showed you last month, and it is to remind what this program is and what it is not. The RMP update is recognized in the RMP as the monitoring program, is not intended to amend the RMP, but rather develop the factual foundation for potential amendments to the current or future iterations of the RMP. Indicators and milestones will help to identify where RMP policy is most effective and where amendments may be called for. Based on the factual outcomes of the monitoring program, the Council may choose to make policy or programmatic changes to the RMP where possible or where necessary, recommend further study of select topic areas. This slide will also look familiar, although we've moved our marker forward, and as you recall, from last month, we're still actively working with the consultants for the fiscal impact assessment and the recommendation report to finalize the contracts and get that work started. For the monitoring program recommendation report, we have finalized the scope of services and contract with the consultant, and they've begun work on data collection. As data collection continues, the consultant will be working in collaboration with the RMP update committee on identification of indicators and milestones. Getting into the scope of services, Task A involves the development of indicators and milestones. Our consultant will use information received through the public comment portal, as well as information received in other means and their own knowledge base to compile a series of data-driven indicators, including indicators from the fiscal impact assessment report. At present time, there are no indicators that have been developed. RMP references suggested indicators as examples, but they were never adopted by the Council. Under the monitoring program, we are starting from scratch on the development of these indicators and milestones. Each indicator that is developed will have associated with it a milestone. And the indicators and milestones, we've asked our consultant that they must be derived from data that is readily available and update it at regular intervals so that we may continue to update that data and monitor our progress in the future. Our consultant will also identify the key trends in the region through the 2004 through 2014 time period and anticipate conditions through the 2014 through 2024 time period. And this analysis will identify and compare to the region the overall land use and development trends within the state, northern New Jersey, as well as identify conditions that are unique to Highlands municipalities. Under Task B of the Scope of Services, the consultant will prepare for and host up to 10 stakeholder meetings, including meetings with state agencies such as New Jersey DEP, the Department of Agriculture, NJDOT, and the Office of Planning Advocacy. These meetings will also encompass Highlands-focused advocacy groups and institutions. The consultant will work in collaboration with the RMP Update Committee on identification of participants for these meetings. But we have to keep in mind the requirements of the Act, which specifically states that we must meet with some of the agencies that I had previously mentioned. There will also be up to 20 technical advisory committee meetings to address topic-specific issues, and these issues have not yet been determined. Each of these meetings, both the stakeholder and technical advisory committees, the consultant will prepare a briefing document that discusses Highlands resources, the pertinent topics of discussion, and how or whether these resources are protected or enhanced by implementation of the regional master plan. Under Task B, the deliverables include the issues and questions to be discussed at each meeting, along with the briefing documents, summary reports, and findings from each meeting. Under Task C, the consultant will prepare for and host 5 outreach sessions for the general public. Each public outreach session will be accompanied by a briefing document, similar to the ones that I mentioned for the stakeholder and technical advisory committees. These documents will describe the overall goals and the role of the RMP, the current status of plan conformance, the role of the Highlands Transfer of Development Rights Program, the history and development patterns in the region and surrounding areas, and the results of the indicator analysis to be completed as part of Task A. The format for these public outreach sessions is still yet to be determined with our consultants, but it is our thought that they would take this multiple roundtable discussion scenario, and members of the council would participate in a similar fashion as members of the public. Deliverables for Task C include the briefing documents that I have mentioned, as well as the outreach sessions themselves. In addition, we have asked the consultant to compile all of the public comments that we have received and summarize them into a synthesis document in support of the monitoring program recommendation report. In Task D, the consultant will develop with the council staff the monitoring program recommendation report, which will identify the indicators and milestones developed earlier in the process and future monitoring program needs. The consultant will incorporate the results of the fiscal impact assessment details regarding the overall health of the Highlands region and as compared to the rest of the state and recommend programmatic revisions and enhancements to the RMP as well as associated programs. Specifically, the monitoring program will address the goals, policies, and objectives in each of the RMP topic areas. Under this task, the consultant will make 3 interim presentations to the council or the RMP update committee during the development of the MPRR and deliver to the council the draft MPRR with presentation of the draft to the council at a regularly scheduled public meeting for consideration of public release. The consultant will also assist the staff in hosting 5 public hearings on the draft MPRR and make revisions to the draft based on public comment and council input. A final MPRR will be given to the council for their consideration and adoption once revisions have been made. Under Task E, the consultant is tasked with developing a research agenda consistent with the research agenda already identified in the RMP. The consultant, based on the results of the fiscal impact assessment and the MPRR, will assist the council staff in identifying the needs and resources necessary for continual data collection and consideration so that timely adjustments to programs and policies of the RMP can be made. The Highlands Council will receive regular monthly updates and reports on our progress as part of the monthly meeting, in addition to the RMP Update Committee report out. The RMP Update Committee will also serve as a resource for ongoing council member questions or comments. This brings us through the scope of services for the recommendation report. Next month, we hope to bring forward the scope work for the fiscal impact assessment. Are there any questions?
A couple questions on timeline, going back to your six-month window. Is there a next six-month window, or?
Yes.
And do you have that yet, or?
Very broad strokes, if you recall from the presentation last month, where we had sort of outlined, you know, what will happen after this six-month period. Mm-hmm. What we're really working on is getting together with our consultant to really flesh that out and get a firm grip on that.
And do you envision, I see that you have the TAC meetings and the stakeholder meetings starting in September. And do you envision those to be completed before the public outreach? It looks like the public outreach kind of overlaps. I'm just a little concerned that it's an awful lot compressed into a short period of time for people to go to all these meetings, particularly if you're trying to get the TAC done, which I think is appropriate, before the public outreach.
Mm-hmm. We have asked a lot of our consultants and of the public to be involved in this process. I think the timeline is something that we can certainly look at. However, we do have a limited time frame to complete the process. So to sort of condense that all together and make sure that everything is occurring when it needs to occur, I think we've also included the stakeholder and technical advisory group meetings as sort of this ongoing function in order to accommodate our consultants going back to those committees, if need be, after the public sessions to discuss certain technical points that may have been brought forward in the outreach sessions.
So what is the deadline for completion of everything?
We hope to be done within the next 12 months.
And not just reiterate, Tracy, we know from the first time around, you and I are the only two who were here, how dragged out it became. Just never seemed to end. We replaced personnel in the midst of it and everything. And I think one of the goals that we've been consistent about in committee meetings is get this thing done and do it right, but let's get it done. And our feeling also is that if we find we get to a point where we have to add 30 days to the process, we can always add 30 days pretty easily. But I feel much better keeping these subcontractors on a tight schedule, setting goals that are going to keep them producing, than sending out something that's going to be 12 months in length rather than 6, which is then going to evolve into 18 months.
Right, and I certainly don't have a problem keeping our consultants on task. My main concern is, you know, squeezing 10 stakeholder meetings up to 20 TAC meetings and then 5 public outreach meetings for the public to participate in, because the TAC, you know, remember, they were well attended. We had a lot of experts that volunteered time and, you know, just a lot of participation in the TAC meetings. So it's just a lot for people to be going to TAC meetings, stakeholder meetings, and public outreach meetings. I'm just concerned that we're going to be constraining public input because it's all squished into a short period of time.
Mm. Right now we're scheduled where we are. I think if we need relief from it, we'll look at it as we get down to that part.
And then one other thing. I think it also just maybe the messaging is the way to handle this, just a word of caution. I think it's going to be a little bit confusing to try to explain about the monitoring report and just how that differs from the other meetings and groups. I think it's just going to be confusing for people, and we need to have a very crystal clear explanation of what this monitoring program is all about, why it's important, and how that input process with those public outreach meetings is different than the TAC, or how they're connected. I think it's all a little bit, unclear.
Well, we'll continue to report out, and we'll continue to post what we can on our website and keep everybody, as transparent as we can, give the information flowing.
you know, if we see difficulties down the line, we'll have to address it.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, what I'd like to do is ask Carol Dickin to come up here, and I think that'll address some of your questions, Tracy. We've been making some changes to our website to address the monitoring program components and provide those explanations. So, Mr. Chairman, if it's okay with you.
Thank you. That's a good segue, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tracy, for providing that segue. Yes, we recognize that this is obviously a hugely significant program for us, and our objective is to try to make it as clear as possible. And to that end, we have recently made some changes to the Highland Council website. Hopefully all of you are familiar with the fact that on our primary navigation on the left-hand side, we have the regional master plan. When you click on that, there are two submenu items. There's the adoption archive, which has the entire history. It'll be a walk down memory lane for you guys. And then the monitoring program. The base information about the master plan, including the technical reports, is here on this main page. But the monitoring program page, previously, for anybody who had seen it, simply had placeholder text that basically said, we will post things here as they become available. We now have a good bit of content. So this main page tries to provide an overview and background. And right now we have a third level navigation on the right-hand side, which is just the content we have to date. The anticipation is that this would grow and evolve as more information becomes available. So right now, these are the primary areas. We have the update committee, and you know, these are the committee records that have been reported out at this meeting. I should also note that all of the content in this section of the site is content that is available elsewhere on our site, so different people think about content in different ways. All of this information is available via the calendar page of our website. So we just put it all here for ease of use. Project components. This is the tripod approach that Kurt mentioned. And this, Tracy, hopefully will address some of what you're talking about. This tries to explain the three primary components of the project. There's information, you can go to the consultant websites. There's the original RFPs, the resolution authorizing the different contracts. Corey's presentation will be added here under the monitoring program recommendation report because it outlines the scope of services for that contract. And then presentations. Right now, this may or may not live forever as a menu item, but right now it seemed to make sense. It was a single point where we could put some of the presentations that have been made. Again, of course, presentation that he just made would be added here. So that's what we've done for now. It's in its infancy. It will grow and evolve over time. We are also working toward making a change to the homepage to make a direct link right to that. This part of our website is going to change, and there will be a graphic link here that will take you right to the monitoring program recommendation, the monitoring program page, so you won't have to click twice, because I know sometimes people don't like to click twice. So we're working on it, and we're well aware of it, and I look forward personally to working with all of our vendors to on the communications piece of it. Is that helpful?
I would just tell you also, having been on both sides again, I feel very confident that our staff has a real good grasp on the process. I think we're approaching the review in a very logical, organized way. And we've got good, competent people working on it. And the three council members that are on the committee, Richard, Michael, myself, remain very dedicated. We have made every committee meeting thus far. I think we continue to do so, right, Mr.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so sorry. I just count the chair who has also attended. I'm so sorry, Chair. Just lost my job.
Anything else to report out for?
No, nothing else.
Anything?
Thank you. Any comments?
Just one last comment. Sure. I'd like to make a bid again that the RMP update committee be open to the public. I think it exposes a lack of transparency. It doesn't look good for the council to have closed door meetings. And I think, you know, the more participation, the better. And having people sit and listen and be aware of this as it's fleshed out at these committee meetings is very important. And so I request again that these meetings be open to the public.
Thank you, Tracy. Noted. Any other comments? Seeing none. Finish up the report. Thank you, Mr. Alstead.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is public comments. A reminder that to keep it to 3 minutes, I once again will ask any issues involving Fenimore to hold their questions till the end.
so I can allow Mr. Alstead to take over at that point in time.
Mr. Chairman, can I just make a quick comment?
Sure.
Most of you may be aware that dual appraisal is stalled in the legislature, and I wonder if I might make a motion that we renew our support for dual appraisal and send this letter to both the Senate President and the head of the Assembly so that we can encourage them to be listened. My understanding is the Governor's Office supports this. My understanding is that there's the support to vote on it, and that it may be held up until the funding source gets sorted out.
But I believe that letter did go out that we agreed to the last meeting, but we'll make sure that copy everybody in the legislature. Everything I understand, I'm not sure what's holding it up or what held it up. I'm a disappointed in it myself.
I think there was a cancellation of one of the Assembly sessions.
From what I understand, that it's supported on all sides, so
unless that's probably something else somebody wants.
And the last one was approved, and then retroactively put in place. Just want to keep the thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Back to public comments. Would anybody in the public wish to be heard on any issue other than federal? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Deborah Post. I'm a property owner in Chester Township. Got that? Thanks. At your last meeting, I handed my comments in for attachment to the minutes as I was delayed in arriving here timely for public comment. My comments today assume my submitted comments were read, possibly not a reasonable assumption. The Highlands Act amended NJSA 4:1C-31. Which are the directions regarding appraising and valuing development easements in farmland preservation applications. The amendment allowed the municipal averages for properties in highland sending zones to be utilized in determining the value of a development easement. This council's financial advisors, Integra Resources, determined the municipal averages for all highlands communities, and those values are part of the regional master plan and in its TDR technical report. The work of Integra Resources was competent, and their municipal average determinations are reasonable. Thus, the data for implementing the legislature's intent in its amendment of 4:1C exists. However, the State Agricultural Development Board adamantly refuses to honor the legislature's intent and adamantly refuses to allow this council's municipal averages to be utilized in preservation applications of Highlands Preservation Area landowners. I know, I have asked and been refused. The SADC's chosen appraisers include some who haven't even graduated from college and have never earned appraiser accreditation from the Appraisal Institute, the recognized association of trained appraisers. New Jersey's process of approving appraisers would never pass the conflict of interest tests of Dodd-Frank. The approved appraisers, dependent on the SADC for their bread and butter, know without being told that they are to lowball the appraisals of harmed Highlands landowners. After all, the harmed Highlands landowners have no other options, so a deeply flawed undervaluation suffices. Rape is a fair analogy. We've been financially raped, and raping the dishonored again is no big deal, right? The Highlands Act also amended NJSA 13:8C-39, directing the SADC to solicit the recommendations of this council concerning farmland preservation strategies in the Highlands region. The statute provides clear intent regarding how property losses of harmed Highlanders are to be valued and provides this council with clear authority to involve itself in the process of development easement sales here in the Highlands. However, to date, this council has done little to nothing to ensure that the Highlands landowners are treated fairly.
Thank you, Ms.
I have two more sentences. Indeed, 4:1c tells you that we are to be treated with priority. I ask this council to pass a formal resolution recommending that the Highlands municipal averages be utilized by the SADC whenever a Highlands landowner so requests as part of their farmland preservation application. Such a resolution should make it easy for everyone here to agree upon and would be of immense assistance to us, those of us seeking a fair and honest appraisal of our property losses.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson.
I appreciate being interrupted.
I will state that I have read your submittal from your last meeting, and I am working with Ms. Nordstrom on addressing some of your suggestions in there. Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on anything? Yes, sir.
Thanks for letting me speak here today. I appreciate that. My name is Hank Klump. I own 150 acres in the Highlands Preservation. Last month, I requested some information from the council as to how my property will be taxed in the future when I no longer can farm and I am left with property that has no equity and that can do nothing but stand idle. I have not heard a word from anyone concerning this. So, yes, the tax office is right. No one has any answers because, once again, the Highlands Council is so poorly written that this is just another example of how it has hurt so many people. Anyone who did not have property values stolen does not understand or care. I have 7 grandsons and 2 granddaughters. My oldest grandson is getting married this month. He has worked on the farm alongside me since he was a kid, and he's always talked about building a home on Grandpa's farm. Now, thanks to politics, not scientific study, that dream is gone forever. I can't give my grandson land that all he can do is sit and look at. The only new residents that can move in are turtles and birds and deer. At this point, these critters better look out if they get Grandma's on her wrong side. Her grandson's dream isn't coming true because of politics. Has ruined our family's plans, but we invested in for our grandchildren's future is gone. Now it is just pennies on a dollar with no dedicated funding source in place to compensate for those losses. Tewksbury, where my property is, has absolutely no record of any scientific study and was never on the Highlands map. A mayor and his posse moved the line over just to keep my farm apart. Then they moved on and away and have never looked back to see all the harm that has been done to the people who are just honest, hardworking people who were robbed and left with life at Walton changes. How can you all feel justified? A month ago, I was told that this council was meeting to discuss funding for people affected by the islands. Has this ever happened? Has any committee ever met? Are there minutes? Has this ended with a dead end, like always? Am I talking to the wall? And on your question of cost, you know, I can't go out and buy a tractor unless I know how much it costs. And the same thing with the Highlands Act. It was passed, and most of the legislators didn't even know what was in it. How can this happen? You get frustrated after a while. It's been 10 years.
Thank you
very much. I appreciate your time.
Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
George Stafford, Highlands Coalition. I had a question on, you had the stakeholders meetings and the advisory meetings. up to 5 and up to 10 and up to 20. Back when I was writing radio copy for the radio station in Newton, we'd say, you know, up to 50% off, but almost everything was 5% off. So, I mean, do we have a minimum on a number of those meetings? Because included in up to 10 is nothing. That's the question.
I think it's fair to say that we're going to be approaching those limits rather than not approaching those limits.
So there's no minimum, but there is a maximum of 10. But it would be feasible that you'd not have any meeting at all.
Again, that's derived from the scope of work that we've provided to the contractor, so there had to be some sort of number placed in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't put the number in expecting them to only produce one if we were suggesting that there should be 20.
Well, up to 5 or up to 10 and up to 20 is not a number. It's a range, and it goes from 0 to 10. I'm just asking, are we guaranteed some portion of that? I mean, you're saying, trust me, we're going to have enough meetings, don't worry about it. That's the response.
Court?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The numbers are in there for budgeting reasons. They reflect the maximum number of meetings that are accounted for in the budget. If we decide to add additional meetings, we would have to add additional budget. That's the reason for the maximum. The number of meetings that are to be held are at the discretion of the council.
Okay, so the minimum is still 0.
Sure.
I guess technically.
Okay. We'll be holding meetings. Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
Yes, sir.
My name is David Schoaf. I own a farm in Lebanon Township. And I'll go back to the minutes of the last meeting where I asked for definitions of the words stakeholder and land preservation. I would like you to define these words so when you use them, I know what you're talking about. Also, I asked about Mr. Gressler's previous outreach to you, Mr. Chairman, about getting together a property compensation committee, which he volunteered to be on. Any progress in this?
Well, there.
Can you try that?
Please.
We have established an HCC bank committee. It's just started to meet. Councilmember Walton is the chair, and if he wants to jump in, I'll defer to him. But in the meantime, I will say that is the committee. And I've had this conversation with Mr. Dressler. That is going to end up being the Property Compensation Committee. We're already dealing with the PSE&G monies. We're trying to develop criteria. But that is underway, and I have every hope for it.
How much is the PSE&G money?
$18 million.
Okay. There's been various assessments of the economic loss, direct loss to property owners, which vary anywhere, if you believe Lathrop, is from $10 to $12.5 billion. If you believe a land appraiser in Newton, Holenstein, it's $15 billion. We're talking millions. Do you know what a million is? Do you know what a billion is? A billion is 1,000 millions. You're talking not even pennies. Not even pennies. Last night I went to a meeting in Lebanon Township where they adopted a Highlands Area Exemption Ordinance. And the document is based on a model Highlands Area Exempt Ordinance prepared and provided to the Highlands municipalities by the New Jersey Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council. That's you. I objected to certain facets of it. And last week I gave you Black's Law Dictionary of exempt. Okay? Then when I read this document, I don't feel particularly exempt when I have to apply for exemptions that are granted by law to me as a property owner of the Highlands, when I have to fork over $100 minimum fee and a $750 initial deposit for professional review to determine whether I get an exemption or not. This is your work. This is your work product. You send it out to these municipalities, and you have you as a council have no idea what your staff is doing. Time you took charge. And, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No, I'm not done yet. I got the fees, and I feel it also exceeds the law when
Mr. Shelf, thank you. I could talk to you after the meeting if you have further conversations to bring up.
I beg your pardon?
Your time is up. If you want to just touch base with me after the meeting, I'm certainly happy.
I'm not going to hang around for you to deal with it. No, we'll talk while we're both dealing with Fenimore. Out of all.
Good. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Seeing none, we're not going to close public portion. I apologize. At this point in time, I'll turn the meeting over to Vice Chair Alston, and you can open up, continue the public session.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just allow Mr. Riley to pull his things together. If you've already spoken and you would like to speak on the Fenimore issue, you are welcome to. We just remind everybody that we do have a 3-minute rule. And I just, again, implore upon you all to be respectful to the council and the staff tonight where we're speaking. We will be equally respective back to you. We certainly made a lot of effort in the last 30 days to open up the pathways of communication to both the DEP and to Roxbury Township, which the acting executive director shared in her report. We'll allow some latitude in terms of questions and answers, but we're not going to turn it into an interrogation. But if you have an informational question that we can answer, we'll certainly do it. If you have some more in-depth questions, we will certainly provide you access to a staff member if we can be of any assistance. With that, we'll open up to the Fenimore issue. If somebody would like to speak, now is the opportunity. Yes, sir.
Good evening, Ken Collins from Andover. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today. Finding out just now that in 31 to 40 days that work for capping might begin on the landfill is a bit disturbing. And I wanted to thank the council for making the empty gesture of writing to Bob Martin at NJTEP and asking to be kept informed about their progress at Fenimore Landfill. This gesture would have some teeth if you would pass a motion to rescind the redevelopment designation that you granted that reopened the landfill to the new dumping and resulted in the current debacle at the site. I urge the Highlands Council to pass such a motion immediately, thereby showing the community that you'll put your money where your mouth is and play the only card you have in your hand. That's it. That's all you got. Rescinding the designation may be an empty gesture in your eyes, but not in the eyes of the community, and not in the eyes of those who've been harmed by this disastrous boondoggle of a project. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else like to speak this evening? Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Bob Schultz from Roxbury, and I'm also the president of REACT. I want to thank each and every one of you for putting the landfill on the agenda here tonight, or this afternoon, to hear our concerns about the health and well-being of not only the humans, but the animals and the environment. I wanted to also thank you for giving us an update from the NJDEP. We learned a lot more here today than we have at our council meetings, the last three of them combined. There was a lot more information here, and we appreciate that. Last meeting, the Highlands Council is here to protect and monitor the well-being of resources in the Highlands area. Last meeting, you said it would do no good, have no practical effect not an appropriate time to take action to rescind the approval of the solar, and that if you did, it would not have an impact on our lives and not be a false empty gesture. I would completely disagree with you. By rescinding that waiver, it would prevent from the council making the same mistake twice. By doing this, you are showing that the council has the power to protect the highlands in which you are charged with. It would force any future development of this land to come before the council again. By rescinding the waiver, it would prevent the other two-thirds of the Fenimore site from becoming another disaster. By doing this, it is a true and full gesture to the residents of Roxbury, and it will make an impact on all the lives in their futures and all of our futures. You might not know this, but Drake's Brook has a stressor indicator study completed on it in 2010. That report, as of last week, was still deliberative and not available to the public. Inside information from people at the NJDEP tell us that the report is not favorable at all. And in fact, it is said that if this report came out before you granted the waiver, the project, the Fenimore project, would have been significantly delayed or even canceled until further environmental testing occurred. To protect the highlands, the drinking water to millions, and the residents of Roxbury, I ask you to reconsider rescinding the waiver immediately. And I also ask you to draft and send a resolution to the NJDEP to conduct core soil sampling before the capping process begins. You do have that power, and it will help and let us know exactly what is in that landfill, because it affects millions of people. It's not just the residents of Roxbury. And I don't know how we get a resolution done. I don't know if you have to vote on it or somebody has to make a motion for it, but I truly beg you to do so. The township has failed in the courts. The owner of the landfill has failed as well. The residents want to know, and it will relieve their fear and anxiety here. And in any type of remediation, you have to know what's in there first before you actually remediate.
Just going to need you to wrap up, please.
You got it. Was there a letter to the NJDEP drafted? Did you draft one? Because I know that was said last meeting that you were going to draft a letter.
I'm just going to have to ask. We need to conclude now, but I will respond by saying that we did send a letter to Commissioner Martin at the DEP, and we also sent a letter to the Roxbury Township Administrator, Mayor, and Council.
The letter to Commissioner Martin
is posted on the website. Yes. It's posted on the website.
Oh, it's posted on the website.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And was the report that you gave also on the website too, or is
the one I just gave?
Yeah, the one about Fenimore.
That's not on the website.
Will it be?
It's just a verbal report.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else like to speak this evening? Yes, ma'am.
Marion Emery of Oxbury, New Jersey. As one of the families affected by Fenimore Landfill, I would like to ask you to please rescind. Yes, it might not mean anything to you, but it would mean the world to us who are affected. Like Bob said, if somebody else were to buy the rest of Fenimore to do this again, I can't live through this again. I have asthma. I can only imagine what it's doing to the little kids with asthma because I know what it does to me. If I have to wear a mask in my own house, what are these little kids going through with their young lungs? Please, please consider rescinding this and helping the people of Roxbury so that we do not have to go through this again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am, please.
Hi, my name is Kathy Pineda, and I live on Raritan Avenue, appropriately, and I have Drake's Brook in my backyard. We've lived here for 15 years, and I raised my youngest and the next to youngest playing in Drake's Brook and enjoying the beauty that we had there. We had the great blue heron and slipping rocks for crawfish. So I eagerly signed up for Raritan Headwater Stream Monitoring for this year, just so I could see that the brown brook trout that are endangered have been gone for 2 years. I don't see any activity in it. And this year I was really alarmed when I saw that the mallards are not even going in the water anymore. We have a bunch of them that hang out. It's a little low area in my backyard between my four neighbors. And they'll go for the cracked corn I put out for the birds and come on up and then go play in the water. And they're not even going in the water. We don't even have water spiders. So I'm like, what is going on? So we signed up for stream monitoring. And despite what the DEP is saying and despite what you'll say on a map, we have pictures and evidence. And Angela from Raritan Headwaters is going to test the portion of the stream that's feeding right into Ledgewood Brook, which goes into Drake's Brook, which is coming under the 40 feet of garbage to the Raritan Headwaters area. It is a stream. It goes under the garbage. It's from different streams up in the Poetseek above the Fenimore landfill, and it does travel through, pick up the toxins, and then deposit them in the water. What usually takes a half hour to find about 100 invertebrates, which we must, to send away to be studied, it took us an hour and a half. And I was finding things almost microscopic to count them so that we could find something living. And we weren't even upstream where it was coming right out of the landfill. So I would ask you, please, if you can overturn your decision. The DEP, it does not have the Highlands in any of their scope of what they should be doing. I know that you people do, and I thank you for caring about the water quality. I can't believe the trout are gone. I used to love to watch the fly fishermen come through my yard, and I mean, when the water spiders are gone, it's got to be really bad, and this is going into the Raritan River. So please consider rescinding the motion, just so that the DEP knows that somebody is looking over their shoulder. Once it's capped, that water's still going to be flowing underneath through the toxins and into the river. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anybody else like to speak this evening? Yes, sir.
Carl Panetta, I belong to her. I have a question, because I don't understand how it goes. Does the Highlands Committee or Council report to the DEP? Are they?
We're separate, but within.
Okay. So my question is, if the DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, right? That's correct. Department of Environmental Protection. And that's supposed to be the environment. Everything that's included. And I understand we have the emergency order, but the DEP is only looking at the smell abatement. Well, the Department of Environmental Protection should take into effect what Kathy just said and all the other things that are getting polluted and getting fouled up because of that. So how can And since you guys work there, like I asked the last time, this time it's a little easier, I think. Why is DEP having tunnel vision and only doing one thing and nothing else counts? And environmental protection. I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself so many times, but environmental protection means the entire environment, not just alleviating the smell. And I'm not even talking about the people who are getting sick. The Environmental Protection Agency, that's what they're supposed to do. I mean, it just bothers me that... So can anybody on this committee that I asked the last time for something else, but I'm asking, can anybody talk to the Environmental Commission and say, it's the entire environment, not just the abatement of the smell? I mean, you guys are part of that group. Environmental protection. So that means we can pollute. We can drop. I can go up there and I can put oil and gasoline and anything else, but it's the smell. So before you tell me my time's almost up, I'd like to have somebody, tell me that they're going to go talk to that guy who's the head of the DEP, because it bothered me. Not only that I live there, and my house is not worth what it used to be, but when Chris Christie comes out and says, Roxbury, deal with it, environmental protection. Can somebody answer that question for me? Can they talk to the Environmental Protection Agency and say, not just the smell, there's other stuff going on? Somebody answer that question? I think that's an easy question to answer. Can somebody do that?
Kurt Dunn?
Yeah, answer my question. Somebody.
We are in constant dialogue with the DEP on this issue, but we cannot instruct them what to do or how to handle it. It's not within our purview. And respectfully, you are out of time now.
Okay, respectfully, you're out of time, but hold on. You guys work for the DEP. You mean to tell me if somebody there is wrong and they're not doing what they should be, you're afraid because you work for them to say anything?
We don't work for the DEP.
You're part of that group, right?
We're part of the Highlands Council.
Oh, yes, but you're a dotted line to them. So that means you don't want to talk to them, you don't care about the environment. So this whole Harley stuff.
I ask for respect, your time is up, please sit down. I'm not going to ask you again.
What are you going to do to me if I don't walk down?
I will call the police.
Well, call them. That'll be the good news, call them.
I will. Don't test me. I ask for respect and decorum in this room,
and
sir.
And I'm not getting
it. And you push it every time. You push it every meeting, sir. And it's not helping, and folks that are out there in the audience, this gentleman's not helping your cause by acting this way. And I'm telling you up front.
I just asked you a question.
And I'm telling you up front, we've been respectful. I've given you a lot of latitude to ask questions and give you answers. And I've asked for one thing back, and that's respect and decorum.
I gave you respect.
You're not giving it, sir.
You didn't answer my question.
Sir, that's it. Don't test me. Don't test me.
I won't test you. You can answer my questions.
Would anybody else like to speak respectfully to the Highlands Council? Yes, ma'am, please.
Hello, Marceline Thompson, Sakasana. This is my first meeting. I'm happy to meet everybody here. And I've been following in the newspapers the council since it started, so I just have more curiosity as to how this works. But in response to, and I don't know the gentleman's name, is that when we're talking about the relationship with the DEP, and I believe, Mr. Elstead, that you said that you can't instruct or do anything, but can you offer opinions?
Absolutely, we can.
Okay, so you could have a dialogue and say these are the things that are coming to our attention.
And we do have that dialogue, and just to bring you up to date, we, again, are part of the DEP, but a separate entity. We can have dialogue with the DEP. We cannot tell them what to do. There are certain authorities that are granted to us. There are certain other authorities that are granted to the DEP. And we operate by a law that was passed by the legislature that tells us everything we can and can't do. This is the act right here. And so while there may be things that we wish to do or would like to do, and while we're very empathetic to the situation that residents are facing, there is a real legal limit to what we're capable of doing.
That I understand, but what you're telling me is that there's this opportunity for dialogue.
That's correct, and we have opened up the doors for that dialogue.
That's great, and then everything, then that would be shared. What's the process for sharing that with the public?
As you saw tonight, the executive director presented a report, and that's what our plan is, to report back to the public on any findings, updates, and in addition to the interactions with the DEP, we're also interacting and have opened the door of dialogue with Roxbury Township as well, the municipal officials there, so that everybody is within the loop.
Excellent, because that's exactly what needs to happen, for people to be conversing together. Yes, and then the organization here getting in there and see how they can also offer some support. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Anybody else like to make comments this evening? Okay, if that's the fact, we will close the public portion. Council members have any comments on Fenmore this evening?
I don't want anybody to think that we're not concerned about this. So we got a fire up at the same time. We have the Ford Duff and Ringwood, which is poisoning people. We have the DuPont problem in Ponton Lake. A third of the town is polluted. I have a recent problem, although minor compared to those two in Clifton. This kinds of things really bother me. Don't think that we're not concerned about this. If we had the legal right to do something about it, we would. But what we're limited to is what we're legally allowed to do. Well, allowing for a future solar site, if it's capped and remediated properly, was all we did. You can rescind that, but it has no impact on whether or not it's remediated properly. And I am concerned, whoever said that there's a stream under it, same thing with Pompton, the same thing with the Ford plant. I agree with you. If there's underground aquifers, I don't know what capping is. I'm not a scientist. I don't know how they cap it, but I don't know how you stop pollution for streams that run under polluted properties. Water tends to go down into the ground. So I am concerned about it. We get yelled at for things the legislature did. We're a planning board. We don't have legislative authority. We don't have legal authority to do some things. I get that people are frustrated for everything they come here to yell us about. But believe me, we go home, at least I go home, and I've been talking to some of my colleagues, we all go home and are very concerned about this. You know, when it's kids, it's not just kids, but when it's kids involved, it really does grab at you. You know, and I wish we could say to you, we're going to stop this, but that would be political pandering. Because we don't have a legal way of stopping it. We're informing the DEP. They're the people that have the shotgun. And the legislature are the people that you vote for locally that should be protecting you. You come here and yell at us. Go to their office every day and scream. Because you might get something done when they're worried about getting reelected. You know, we're all sympathetic to every issue that comes before you. It just gets really frustrating when we get yelled at for things that we really can't do anything about. I wish I could. I can vote for people in the Highlands, Clifton's, I live in Clifton, that's not in the Highlands, but my legislators are in Essex County. We're the only county on the entire Passaic. So I can't even vote to get somebody out who's not supporting what I want. They generally do support what I want. So you got to target the people in the legislature. The assembly runs every 2 years, and get done what you want to have done. That's the political process. But coming and yelling at a planning board that's trying to decide whether somebody's in compliance with the act and planning, it isn't really going to help you. It may make you feel better, but it's not going to help you.
Thank you, Councilman Chamberlain.
You mentioned, Margaret, that the letter to Bob Martin, the commissioner of the DEP, is online. Are there copies here for these people to see? Because, you know, I have the two. There's a letter July 3rd to Commissioner Martin. There's a letter July 15th to the town manager in Roxbury Township. I'll just read just the first paragraph to Commissioner Martin. On behalf of the New Jersey Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council, which is the Highlands Council or Council or Council, I don't know what that means, we are writing to express our concerns regarding the Fenimore landfill in Roxbury, New Jersey. And it goes on to, you know, say what we're concerned about. So, you know, someone was saying that we have no input with the DEP. We're sending a letter to the commissioner that as the council, we have concerns with what's happening at the Fenimore landfill. So, and we also sent a letter to the Roxbury town manager. So, basically the same letter. So we're doing what we can do. I wish we could do more, just as council member my colleague here said that, you know,
James.
People should have
he's from my county.
He's my freehold, but people should have first names, not like second names. You know what I mean? So James, Bruce. I call him Mr. Bruce once in a while. But we're doing what we can do. And I feel for you. And I've been involved with environmental concerns in my county, in my town. And if I lived in your situation, I'd be here yelling at us too. But we're the wrong people to yell at. It's too bad that the DEP doesn't have public meetings that you can go and yell at them. And the thought of not only the health risks that you have, but the stream running perpetually and for probably forever underneath that horrible situation is not only going to pollute Drake's Brook, but the Raritan River and whatever else. It's not going to end there. It's a terrible, terrible thing, and I hope you continue to put pressure on your legislators, the governor, and the DEP.
Sure. Yes. Now, what my last two colleagues have said is true. The pressure has to come from you people on the DEP. Unfortunately, not all DEP agencies in the state of New Jersey are created equal.
What is a priority for the DEP in 1 year is not necessarily a priority for the DEP in another year. You are obviously not a priority for the DEP. There's no question about it. In my estimation, they don't care about what's going on in Roxbury. I think that's become very evident. And you've got to combat that by getting back at the DEP and pressing them, and pressing them to the limit so that you foster a situation where they have no choice but to listen to the people in Roxbury. You've got to put the pressure on them, full court press, because you're obviously not a priority for them. You are here. You know, we've tried to do what we could do here, and you know we're continuing to move in that direction. But you're obviously not a priority there.
Mr. Chairman,
please.
Just want to say that I still think we should consider rescinding our approval, and the reason is because it's the one thing we can do. I know there's not support for that amongst the council members, but I think my hope is that as we learn more information, we get these reports from our executive director about the conversations that are ongoing with DEP. We've also opened up communications with Roxbury. That information will inform the council and show the council that our approval of the solar facility is being seen as an approval of the use of that site and the capping of that site. As DEP is planning to have the thing resolved. And the people feel that that resolution that DEP is moving forward with is not adequate to protect their health. We have talked about here, and everybody understands, I mean, we have the highest number of Superfund sites in the nation, this New Jersey. And everybody on this council has probably experienced one of those sites in their own municipalities. So we know about the water and the air pollution associated with these sites. And certainly, the situation at Roxbury is very similar to what we have experienced elsewhere. And if we're not using the one thing that we can do in order to put the pressure there, then we are passing the buck. I'm sorry, I still feel we're showing a weakness here by not being willing to remove or rescind our approval for the that solar facility. And I think we should still consider to do that.
Any other council members like to speak? Mr. Dowdy?
Yeah, I'll be brief. Obviously, I supported Tracy's last motion to do that. I still supported that. But two things. Can we request from the director or chair to get a report, an environmental report, on the flow of that water, how much flow goes in, how much flow goes out, the actual determination of how deep it is? I think we have the right to request it. I don't know if we'll get it, but I think we can request it because it has to do with water and in the Highlands. So I think we do. I think we have the right to request it. So I would put that on the record that I would like that requested and ask that we get a full report on the how much water flow, the depth, where it goes, direction, X, Y, and Z. So we actually really know what we're talking about and not. Because I have now more concern because it really wasn't expressed that way from the public. But now when you really visualize where how water runs and it gets to the headway, it actually is, if it is going right down through the bottom, that site capping is not going to alleviate the...
Let me just ask you, I'm actually agreeing with you, but I want to ask a question. So we get a report and it says that Kathy won't do anything. We send our approval for... building anything on there, essentially.
Yeah.
What is that?
Two things. I think.
Because we can't.
I think that it's another. I think it's another step asking for help, and I think it's time that you step away from the. Well, you attack the DEP as much as you can, but I think it's time to really start putting pressure on our congressmen to really start looking at this situation. That has, you know, if you want to go back and look at research history, Florio was one of the top guys who wrote a lot of the laws on the Superfund site. So there has been history. In our Congress to deal with this kind of stuff. If we're not getting what we need from the state DEP, from our state legislators, then maybe we need to start.
Mr. Chairman,
start going to Congress.
Yes. May I request that at some point during August's meeting, we have an executive session on this matter to revisit a resolution to rescind?
Well, we can certainly put an executive session with them more on the agenda for next week.
I support that.
So do I.
It's not a personnel matter. We're not involved with a lawsuit, so why would we?
That's potential. Potential issues.
Anything has potential. No, I agree. For the way you're looking at me.
There's already, I think, 14 lawsuits.
Got to be part of any of those lawsuits?
No, but.
Any chance of letting be a part of any of those lawsuits?
There is a large potential that if we were to take action, then we would then be engaged in a potential lawsuit. So that's the basis for going into executive session. I think that I would just impress upon my fellow council members to keep in mind that there's two very separate issues here. One is the proper cleaning, capping of the landfill. The other one is the use of the properly capped and cleaned landfill. And our jurisdiction is strictly limited to what can happen on top of a landfill that's properly capped and cleaned. The use of a properly capped and cleaned landfill, I think everybody would still agree, for solar is an appropriate use, which is why I think that it's very important that we keep in mind that the issue here is the properly cleaned and capped landfill, not the use of solar on top of a clean and capped landfill. We need to be very careful not to confuse the two issues.
Correct. They will never have another say on it. Because the brownfield already has been declared that it's inherently beneficial, and if the Highlands pulls out, if we pull out of there, chances are we'll never get an opportunity to keep our finger on that pulse. As long as we have our finger on that pulse, we have a say. You pull out of there, you have no say. No.
We don't have a say now. We just said we don't have a say.
I didn't finish.
Mayor Dowd.
I still had the floor then. And
sorry.
What's his name? Bruce? Cut me off as the astute politician that he is.
Mr. Bruce.
Mr. Bruce is one of the best.
Well, your 3 minutes was
up. My 3 minutes. The only other issue that I would like to bring back up, which I brought up last meeting, is timetables on approvals. I think they're very important for this council. When something is approved and it's not moved on in a certain period of time, that it should lose its approval. We do it at a municipal level. I don't know why they can't do it here. It's just, I think it's in our purview to do that, and I think we'd like that looked at by the attorney and have a report back to the council if we can make that amendment.
And that's a policy discussion that the entire council with our chair can sort of entertain.
Yes. All right, thank you. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
My main concern is some of the comments that I heard here tonight regarding the stream and the water under. And I'm very concerned that even if it's capped properly, is it then, with this water potential water problem, is it then really an area that should be developed, or should other things be done there? That's what I want to talk, some of the things I want to talk about.
Well, our staff has a monthly meeting scheduled with the DEP, and I think that it's safe to say that our executive director knows that this is one of the topics they're going to discuss with the DEP officials.
It's the first time I heard it tonight. It's concerning.
I'm also in favor of Tracy brought up, so I'd be willing to look at that at a meeting and discuss it again.
Okay.
I don't feel comfortable with the approval they have in place right now.
So, have the executive session next time.
Any other council members?
Okay.
There's a motion to adjourn.
Second.
First. Thank you very much.